You had a patient who was a 55-year-old man that you mentioned here in your list. Can you talk a little bit about him?
Yeah, this is a 55-year-old young patient, which nowadays it is always quite shocking to be told that you have multiple myeloma. And if they go to the internet, they still have all these old data showing that, you know, it's an incurable disease. They're going to die within 3 years and life expectancy is 3 years. You know how they interpret the median life expectancy. They think they only live for 3 years. So they come in with all the different anxieties. But the good news for this young man is that the upfront treatment has dramatically improved. In this particular patient, I would, again, looking at all the features for this particular patient.
Could you go through those specific features in his case and what thoughts you had about options?
Yeah, this particular patient I had seen, he was actually picked up a little bit earlier. So he was in the asymptomatic myeloma phase. His disease had a little, what we call as an MGUS or an asymptomatic phase before he progressed and he became symptomatic and then he had to be treated. Usually patients who have that kind of a phase, that itself tells you that disease is kind of slowly progressing over a period of time.
How long previously had he been diagnosed?
He had been 3 years in an asymptomatic phase, slowly progressing to become a multiple myeloma.
What was his life situation and his state of mind during those 3 years, as best you could tell?
I think he was hoping that he would be the one who would stay there for the next 10 years without progressing or whatever. But obviously, he progressed at 3 years. And his features, his cytogenetics were good. He was hyperdiploid. The odd chromosome, trisomy 3, 5, 7, those kind of cytogenetic abnormalities were there. He didn't have these cytogenetic deletion 13. He did not have the 414 translocation. He is relatively young, 55 years of age. Everything will tell me that this patient is going to do well. So when a patient is going to do well, now we suddenly again have a little dilemma at the hand. How do we want to handle it? So let's put it one way. If this is a patient who's seen by Mayo Clinic physician, say Vincent Rajkumar, he would feel absolutely comfortable saying that this patient should go on lenalidomide, dexamethasone, and could have the stem cell harvested and stored. And he can, if he had a very good partial remission, etc., he can actually opt to go through stem cell transplantation or opt not to go through stem cell transplantation. But in general, the Mayo Clinic physicians would prefer still in young patient that they can still go through stem cell transplantation and followed up with lenalidomide maintenance therapy. So they would have chosen that particular round.
Okay, so you describe what would happen if we went to the Mayo Clinic. What are some of the other options?
Yeah, well, if he went to Paul Richardson, he would have gotten Velcade, Revlimid, dexamethasone, and then he would have gone through stem cell transplantation. If he had gone to University of Arkansas, he would have gone through Total Therapy 3, or if they are going to go through Total Therapy 4, if it had started, he would have gotten all possible combination, Velcade, DTPase, induction therapy, tandem transplantation, further maintenance therapy, etc. So you can see that the choices of therapy for these patients are somewhat variable based on geographical location, what particular clinical question that particular center is offering. And if it went to a community oncology setup, I think in this younger patient population, especially results coming from IFM, you know, the ASH ASCO plenary presentation, I think people would still feel this young patient should accept an high-dose therapy stem cell transplant route with post-transplant if he was not in VGPR with additional maintenance therapy. This would be kind of a consensus approach in the community that this young patient should be still offered high-dose therapy and stem cell transplantation.
But he went to you, so what did you do?
Well, this particular patient, you know, as you know, the patients do come to me, a lot of them, for consultation. It also partly depends upon whether they come from Greenwich, Connecticut, or they are in an area where I would be the primary physician or not. So my practice is somewhat little different than a traditional, totally academic with a lot of clinical trial versus traditionally private practice, because I have to be sensitive to the patient. Commuting into Manhattan is not necessarily preferred route and not in all patients. The patient was given all these particular option, and I also placed a call to his local oncologist to discuss this further so the patient can make a choice whether he wants to come and participate in Velcade, Revlimid, and dexamethasone. Some of the patient who would come further out from New Jersey, I actually tell them this is the clinical trial, Velcade, Revlimid, dexamethasone. And if the patient and the physician feel like they want that particular combination because it's being done in Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston and they want the same kind of treatment, they can still have that particular treatment done locally from the local oncologist, then come for stem cell collection, stem cell transplantation.
Now, if the randomized trial you mentioned were open, would you have presented it to this man?
Oh, yeah, I would have presented it to this patient. But as I told you, I would not have necessarily insisted he participate in the clinical trial because participation means the patient is totally tied to our center.
So what is he actually going to be treated with?
I think that patient has yet to make up his mind. He's discussing with the physician, and I do not know whether he's going to make yet another consultation one more time somewhere else.